You're listening to Spokespeople.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Sarah.
And this is Emma.
And we co-host the Spokespeople storytelling events with Rebecca,
who's busy fixing bicycles at REI.
This is our podcast of the true stories told live at our monthly storytelling events in the San Francisco Bay Area.
The story you're about to hear, told by Dan Royals, came from our July 2012 show, Wishful Thinking.
Enjoy the story.
Dan Royals is a doctoral student in history at Temple University in Philadelphia, but sometimes he pretends to live in San Francisco. He has a bad habit of telling the same stories over and over again. Please welcome Dan.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? Okay, great. I came out of the closet just before my 20th birthday. And thank you. And it was actually pretty easy for me. Once I realized that I really wanted to have sex with my friend, who was a man, and that I was very jealous that he was having sex with my other friend, who was also a man, then it just kind of confirmed for me something that I had kind of deeply suspected for a long time, and that other people had suspected of me as well. Growing up, I was shy and awkward and bookish and sensitive, and whether or not people call me faggot and cocksucker, because though I was an easy target, and those are easy names to call easy targets, and that's what adolescent boys do. I don't know if it was that, or that they just knew something about me that I hadn't quite realized myself. But once I kind of came out to myself, as it were, then I started coming out to friends and family, and they were wonderful and supportive, and the whole cliche of coming out, of having a weight lifted off your shoulders, is a cliche because it's true, or at least it was in my case. The one problem that I encountered was that I had no idea how to meet other gay men. And in my first year and a half of college, I had become an athlete. I started rowing. And so all of a sudden, I had access, or I had a claim to, this kind of very conventional, desirable form of masculinity that I had wanted for a long time, but never had. And so I was kind of sure that I didn't want to do anything like join a gay student group that I thought was going to be a bunch of like faggoty people doing faggoty things and being all about being faggoty, and that was it. And I didn't want that because I had like I had this desirable athletic masculinity, and I thought that doing that would be forfeiting that. And I knew that I didn't want to do that. Thankfully for me, my coming out just about coincided with the advent of online social networking. So right about the time I came out was when Berkeley, where I was, got the Facebook. And this was about the same time that Friendster and MySpace showed up. So throughout college, that's pretty much how I met most of the guys that I dated. And that was how I met my first boyfriend, who I will call Sean. That was not his name. So he sent me a MySpace message about halfway through fall semester of my junior year of college, and he looked cute in his pictures, so I gave him my AIM handle, and we started instant messaging, and he told me about himself, and he told me that he played three sports at University of San Francisco, tennis, soccer, and rugby. So that was great. And that he was an intern for Gavin Newsom, who was the mayor of San Francisco at the time. And then he told me something about himself that I didn't really expect. He told me that he was a member of the Spanish royal family. 10th in line for the throne, in fact. At this point in the story, I should emphasize that I was 20 years old and did not have a well-developed bullshit detector. Because I believed him. So, in my defense, there are a couple things about him that made his story seem plausible. One is that he seemed to have a lot of money. When he came to my house for our first date, he was really hopped up on coke. And cocaine is expensive, right? Like, yeah, he couldn't be poor. And on that date, we went to Chez Panisse, which for a college student eating on a meal plan and digging change out of the sofa for coffee, that's extravagant. That's like royal family extravagant. He showed up one time with a bottle of Dom Perignon, apropos of nothing. When Cal went to the Holiday Bowl that winter, we went to the game. He flew down to San Diego. It was great. So there was that. He seemed to have a lot of cash. He also seemed to know a lot of the San Francisco power gays. You know, wealthy men with houses in Twin Peaks and Diamond Heights, and that was new to me. He also wasn't very good looking, despite the cute pics. In person, not so much. He had a distant but distinct resemblance to Sloth from The Goonies, which I just figured, if you're a royal, then you're the product of several centuries of inbreeding, and that makes sense. So those things all seemed to add up to me. There were some question marks that I overlooked. One is that he was homeless. He seemed to always be staying on somebody's couch, a friend or one of his coaches. But no home of his own to speak of. And for the coaches thing, the three sport athlete thing didn't really seem all that plausible, because for somebody who ostensibly played collegiate tennis and collegiate soccer, he was pretty noticeably pudgy, which I was fine, with, but that didn't seem to add up. And also, for being a member of the Spanish royal family, he was pretty darkly complected, and if you look at pictures of those people, they are white as the driven snow. Like, those are white people. So there were some things that added up and some things that just didn't make sense that I overlooked. I really overlooked. And so, I mean, this really wasn't very long relationship. We broke up after like 4 months, which in gay time is like a year. So, I mean, you know, it was good for a first relationship. So true. They say it because it's true. And after we broke up, one of my friends kind of hypothesized that maybe he was like an escort or a high-class hustler, and that explained the money and kind of the power gaze relationship. I don't know about the face thing, but whatever. In any case, you know, what he said about himself was not true. Like, no shit. How likely are you to meet the 10th person in line for the Spanish throne on a MySpace date in San Francisco? Not very likely. But the thing that made his story believable to me was not that he was a good liar, because he was not a good liar, but that I really wanted to believe his lie, and I have to kind of cop to being culpable or complicit in the thing, because I wanted his lie to be true. I wanted this attractive fiction that he presented to me to be real, because to me, especially at the place I was in my life as a newly out and really, really insecure young man, the idea that somebody with all this power and privilege and money, you know, as kind of base as those things are, the idea that this person would, who could probably have anybody because of these things, would want to be with me was kind of irresistible. And so his wishful thinking was my wishful thinking too. That's it.
Thank you, Dan, for telling that story. And thanks to DuBose Park Cafe for providing the space.
And a big thank you to Chris Koster and Ian Matzer for helping with the photography and audio recording.
If you like this story, join us for our monthly live show in San Francisco. Learn more by visiting spokespeople.org. That's spokespeople.org.
Or find us on Twitter and Facebook.
Thanks for listening.